Hello and welcome to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a not-for-profit 30-minute weekly audio podcast primarily for and by amateur astronomers in the UK. Available only online, AT UK is a virtual meeting point for the amateur astronomy community. Each episode is an MP3 file which can be downloaded automatically with a free subscription via one of the many podcast readers. I use iTunes. My name is Gurbir Singh, and I host AT UK. I am not a scientist, nor am I an astronomer. Topics of discussion have no fixed boundaries other than their relevance to amateur astronomy. Each week's episode consists of pre-recorded conversations with individuals discussing the roles, lives and achievements of amateur astronomers and their hobby. More about AT UK at www.astrotalkuk.org. If you have a topic for discussion, drop me a note on info@astrotalkuk.org. AstroTalk UK, amateur astronomy, expert opinion. Episode 4, Sunday, February the 24th, 2008. Today's episode is all about astrophotography. John William Draper took the first ever picture of the moon in 1840 and is thus considered to be the first ever astrophotographer, unless, of course, you know different. In the subsequent century and a half, things have moved on, and never as quickly as in the last decade. So much so that the photographic camera, a stalwart for over a century, is now considered by many for astrophotography to be pretty much obsolete. The era of the digital camera is firmly established. In this episode, Steve Chambers, Jonathan Maron, and David Rutledge talk about these new exciting times. But first, Terry Platt from Starlight Express. What is your personal interest in amateur astronomy?
I've been interested in astronomy since I was a child. I certainly remember when I lived in Yorkshire, which was very dark at that time, looking out at the night sky, seeing various comets like Mercos and Aaron Rowland in the 1950s. Of course, the space age was starting as well, which increased my interest. My parents had some interesting books with astronomical pictures in, and diagram of how the 200-inch Halley telescope worked, which got my interest in trying to use a shaving mirror as a telescope, which, of course, as everybody knows, doesn't work very well. But I was bought a small refractor in the early 60s and took some pictures through that with a small film camera, pictures of the moon, things of that nature, and then decided I really wanted to move up and made a 6-inch reflector, followed by an 8-inch reflector, then a 10-inch reflector, and I used the 10-inch for quite some time. While I experimented with various electronic add-ons, I was always interested in electronics as well, and finally went into electronics as a business. And one of the first things I tried was auto-guiding the telescope. At the time, about the only thing that was sensitive enough was the photomultiplier, and I had great fun building high-voltage power supplies and suffering lots of leakage problems with the insulation and so on. But I did manage to make an autoguider which worked after a fashion, using a vibrating reed which chopped the image of the star and picked up the signal from the photomultiplier. Shortly after that, I was more and more interested in TV-type imaging. If you remember, Patrick Moore had a program from George Hall's observatory in the early 60s using a BBC TV camera on a 24-inch telescope. And that made me think it would be really good to be able to get the pictures on TV rather than using film. In the late 60s, I came by a surplus TV camera. It was an early security camera with a Vidicon. Used that to take some pictures of the moon and thought, this definitely has promise. And it then went quiet for a few years until the early 80s, when I came across some silicon target Vidicons in a surplus electronics shop and built a camera around one of these, which worked really well. And it's possible that some of your listeners might remember seeing some pictures in the Astronomer magazine of Mars and Saturn and such like taken with this camera in about 1982.
Starlight Express has been around since 1991. What's your role in Starlight Express?
Well, it's always been basically a design role. I was always really just interested in trying to build the best possible camera. Initially, I wasn't at all concerned with selling them in a business fashion at all. I was, I suppose, interested in becoming known as somebody who knew something about CCD imaging, but no more than that. However, in the early 1990s, the managing director of the company I still work for retired from the company and knew about my camera designs and said, we really ought to set up a company and try to sell these. And so that's how Starlight Express was formed. It was initially just myself doing the designs and one other person doing sort of sales and marketing. And over a few years, we developed newer cameras. And in about 1995, we developed the recognisable range that we have now with the cylindrical bodies and sealed-off cooling compartment and so on. And that's when it really took off. We managed to break into the American market, and it suddenly became a business.
And it seemed to coincide with the availability and the low prices of CCDs as well.
Absolutely. The CCD price was critical. When I first started looking at CCDs in about 1986, the RCA chips which were available were many thousands of dollars, typically $5,000, and that was a quite small chip. The breakthrough was when somebody said that Sony were doing CCDs for their latest versions of video cameras. The knowledge, or the accepted knowledge at the time, was that video camera CCDs were useless for astronomy. You needed a professional chip. But I thought, well, this is cheap, and it might be worth a try. So I bought one of the early ICX chips, which was, I think, an ICX021. It cost about £106, which, although it wasn't cheap, it was a lot less than $5,000. Managed to build a camera around that, which actually worked quite well. So that was the breakthrough. And of course, since then, CCDs have come down enormously in price.
And the cooling element of your cameras is quite significant as well. Is that where you think the development's taken place recently?
The Sony chips have the great advantage of having a very low dark current, which in itself means the cooling is less important than it would be on a, say, an RCA CCD or one made by the more recognised manufacturers. And that clearly helped. But cooling is important if you want the best possible results. And we did, from the very first, to avoid any complex cooling systems, the typical design at the time used water cooling to enhance the temperature drop on the CCD. And I thought, I don't really want pipes and water and fans and all the rest of it. I need to be able to do this in a simple, compact package. And so we developed quite straightforward and very simple sealed compartment concept of the Starlight cameras with a single or two-stage Peltier cooler. I managed to make this work pretty well, and that's how all the cameras have been designed since.
And what do you see as the most fundamental developments due in the next, say, decade or so?
It's always difficult to look too far ahead, but there's a definite trend towards CMOS images. CMOS has become more practical for astronomical cameras. The Canon range of DSLRs, for instance, use CMOS chips. They're still, in my opinion, not quite as good as CCDs, so have a little way to go yet. But I would imagine that in the next 10 years, CMOS will become a much more commonly used technology. There are other more subtle changes in the CCD field which will probably have an influence. The one that probably is most significant is the electromultiplier type of CCD, which has been made in small numbers by a limited range of manufacturers, but I think will possibly become more important astronomically. The CCDs are a standard CCD structure, but they have the output amplifier at the end of something rather similar to a photomultiplier. It's holding in solid state, so there aren't the high voltages involved, but essentially the signal from the CCD is amplified by electron multiplication in the silicon, and can be amplified maybe 1,000 times in this silicon output stage, which increases the signal to the point where readout noise is effectively zero. You get effectively one electron read noise, which is about the limit of what you can manage.
You've been selling cameras now, say, over a decade, and you've been selling them all around the world to individuals with who are very competent at using them. Are there any specific achievements that you can connect to any of the individuals who have been using your cameras?
I think there have been a few individuals who were so effective at using the cameras that they became really very good promoters of the Starlet Express range. It's quite well known, for instance, that our own Maurice Gavin was very keen on Starlet Express cameras and still uses them, and was influential in promoting the Starlet range by writing an article for Sky and Telescope. And that was extremely valuable to us. I think that was a very major step forward. Maurice still uses the cameras, but we now have people, mostly in the USA, I have to say, but not in all cases, such as Alan Chen, Fred Lehman, and Greg Hartke, quite a few others, who are all expert users and taking such superb pictures that the idea that Starlet cameras are lower cost, lower quality, has been quite dispelled by their efforts. And of course, in the UK recently, Greg Parker down in New Forest has taken some absolutely superb pictures and published them in a recent book, which have helped to promote the performance of the cameras. So, yes, there have been some very influential people who have helped a great deal.
Terry Platt from Starlet Express, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Jonathan Maron, welcome to AstroTalk UK. Where are you based and what do you do?
I work at the headquarters of a company called The Imaging Source, and I'm based in Bremen, Germany. That's right in the north of Germany, about 100 kilometers away from the sea. I am the marketing director of the product division Astronomy Cameras at The Imaging Source for the territories Europe and Asia.
In the past, your cameras have had a strong industrial application, for example, checking the fill level of beer in beer bottles whizzing past at high speed on a conveyor belt in a brewery. Astronomy cameras are a recent addition.
Traditionally, the Imaging Source cameras are deployed in scientific, industrial, and medical applications. Although the Astronomy Camera product line is just over 1 year old, the Imaging Source has been developing hardware and software products for 20 years. January last year, we brought to market a line of highly affordable, robust cameras designed specifically to meet the needs of amateur astronomers. These astronomy cameras are identical in every respect to their industrial counterparts, with the exception of the exposure time. The astronomy cameras can be exposed for up to 60 minutes. We launched a product website at astronomycameras.com, a blog at astronomycamerasblog.com, and even a competition site at, you guessed it, astronomycamerascompetition.com, where you can win our cameras for free. Just enter your name and email address to be in with a chance of winning.
You're a good marketing director, Jonathan. Recording images of astronomical objects involves first recording a movie file of the object and then looking at individual frames in that movie and adding them together. But the process of recording that movie, MOV or AVI, can involve loss of signal. But your software, you say you can do that without loss.
Lossless is simply a technical term that refers to a data compression algorithm that allows the exact original data to be reconstructed from the compressed data. For example, when you save a photo as a bitmap in Windows and then reopen it, the photo is identical as a bit level to the one that you saved. This is the case as bitmaps use a lossless data compression algorithm. For post-processing in software such as Registax, it is critically important that the AVI files or bitmap sequence files are lossless. Failure to achieve this would result in Registax not being able to stack the images correctly. The Imaging Source astronomy cameras ship with the camera control software iccapture.as, with which it is possible to save image sequences as AVI files or singular EMP lossless files.
On your website, you claim the next generation of astronomy cameras. That's a big claim for a relatively new kid on the block.
The label, the next generation of astronomy cameras, refers to the unsurpassed quality of their cameras and their extremely low price. The imaging source has brought the quality, both electrically and mechanically, to the next level. Similarly with their price, comparable cameras cost 2, 3, 4 and even 5 times as much.
You have had quite a lot of feedback from the amateur astronomy community around the world. Why do you think that's the case?
This is simply because they go about their hobby in an extremely passionate manner. They are proud to send us the latest images which they have captured with our cameras. Indeed, the Astronomy Cameras blog at astronomycamerasblog.com has become so popular only thanks to our highly engaged customers. A massive thanks goes out to them all.
Well, Jonathan, I know you speak excellent German, but in my far from excellent German, can I say vielen Dank für Ihre Mühe und Zeit. Bis nächstes Mal.
Thank you, Gerbier, for taking the time to talk to me today about the imaging source astronomy cameras.
And don't forget to keep an eye out for those beer bottles, Jonathan. If they're not full, we'll know where to complain. The following recording took place at Astrofest. My apologies for the background noise. Hello and welcome to AstroTalk. Steve Chambers, the famous Steve Chambers from the Tucam modification. Something you did quite a while ago now, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember how many years ago that was. That must be 2001, 2002, that kind of time.
That's right, yeah. And now you've set up Artemis CCD?
That was set up probably 12 months or so ago.
Oh, I see.
that's quite a young company. So that's probably the last thing that's moved on from. We produced the Artemis cameras. It was sold for a company called Abomile.
Right.
Then we've been selling cameras through the Portuguese company Attic. And now we're making cameras also in the UK under Artemis.
Well, I've actually bought my Tucam from that company in Portugal. Let's go back a bit. When did you start in astronomy?
I guess maybe 10 years ago I started making telescopes. And that's probably the first telescope I had when it was made.
And what do you do for a profession then?
Immunology is my background, so food allergies and things. That's
Artemis CCD cameras, that's something that you said you'd set up about a year ago. You sell just a range of CCD cameras?
Artemis sells two large format cameras. So there's 11 million pixel version and a 4 million pixel. They're manufactured in this country and they're sold through dealers. Also, we developed some automated focusing pieces of hardware, and there'll be one or two little things come out from time to time.
What's the development in CCDs? The chip sizes seem to be getting bigger and the pixel size getting smaller. What's in the pipeline, do you think, in the coming years?
It's been a relatively static time as far as new development goes in CCDs. We had a number of years ago the Sony X-View X had chips came out which were very good IR sensitivity. Kodak keep bringing out bigger and bigger chips at reasonable prices, and exchange rates have helped a bit with those. There is a new technology called electron multiplication in CCDs, but that may have limited use in astronomy. It's just a way of making very sensitive cameras, but they don't have that great a dynamic range, so they're not that good at taking pictures of bright stars or faint nebula at the same time.
The high sensitivity of CCDs, and along with image stacking software, does that mean that amateur astronomers don't really need very large aperture scopes anymore?
I don't think you can ever get enough aperture. It's always going to make things quicker. It's what it's doing. It's, the thing we're doing is driving down read noise. As you drive down read noise, it means it makes more and more sense to stack shorter exposures. The reason to go with a long exposure is that you only get one lot of read noise. So if you've got one 30-minute exposure, you read out once, it's one lot of read noise. If you do however many shorter exposures, you get that multiplication of read noise each time. So as what we're doing with the cameras is driving down reed noise with them, so it's easier to use them with shorter exposures. There's less worry about the mount not tracking. If you get a satellite going across, you can just ignore the one exposure it happens on, rather than spoiling a 30-minute exposure.
I see. Reed noise is the technical term to describe the electronic noise that you get when the image is transferred from the chip to wherever it's going.
Yeah, that's right. There are different types of noise within a sensor, but the read noise is the noise that's added to the image during the readout process, during the conversion to the PC image.
And is that where you think the future developments lie?
As when you design cameras, that's one of the very few things that you can work at reducing. A number of other things are completely locked into this type of sensor. You can't change the quantum efficiency to any realistically useful degree. What you can do is drive down read noise by designing a camera well.
Apologies for all the background noise here at Astrofest. Next time we'll find a quieter venue. And until that next time, Steve Chambers from Artemis CCD, thank you very much indeed. That's three of the many sources of cameras for astrophotography. I discussed some of the details we've just heard with David Ratledge on the telephone, hence the poor quality. Apologies for that. Of course, neither David or I can recommend or endorse any of the products that you've heard so far. You must make up your own mind. David Ratledge is the chairman of Bolton Astronomical Society, but you may know him from the book he edited, Digital Astrophotography, The State of the Art. He's also the owner of an enviable domain name, deep-sky.co.uk. David, welcome to AstroTalk UK.
Thank you very much, Gilbert.
How long have you had that domain name, as a matter of interest?
It must be 8 or 9 years by now, yes. And I didn't get it without the hyphen. Somebody beat me to the deep sky all as one word. Hyphen's not so bad.
I think you did really well there. How long have you been involved in astrophotography?
Well, I started as a teenager, taking pictures of the moon. So, gosh, that's too many years, 40-odd years.
That's a lot of experience. Before we talk about modern cameras, do you reckon we've come to the end of the normal film cameras for astrophotography?
Yes, I think so. It was a remarkably quick death. I don't think anybody thought they would disappear so quickly, but they've virtually disappeared off the scene, and really there's nothing much to recommend them now.
You've heard Terry and Steve talking about cameras, reed noise and CMOS cameras. Is reed noise a big problem these days?
Yeah, I can see where they're coming from. In that for most amateurs, they will not have the best mount in the world, and so have to add images together, lots of short images. And if you're adding a lot of short images, then each image has its own reed noise. Every time you bring an image out of the camera, it has an associated noise with it. So if you've got 100 images added together, you've got 100 reed noises. So it's good that the manufacturers are pushing down reed noise. It's going to help people with sort of ordinary mounts rather than state-of-the-art mounts to get good pictures.
Thermal noise is addressed, I guess, by cooling. Is that another area that you see potential scope for development?
If you look at professional telescopes, they don't actually deduct, they don't take off the dark frame. They cool them so much that they just ignore dark current. Now, whether amateurs will go that way, probably we can't afford their kinds of cooling. So I suspect dark current will be an issue, and cooling the camera is always going to be better for us.
So coolers are with us for a while at least, I guess, then?
Having said that, with digital SLR cameras, there's no cooling, or at least most of them don't have cooling, and yet they are now producing results that almost rival cooled cameras. The difference is getting smaller and smaller, so perhaps cooling will not be as important in the future.
And the size of the CCD chips and the size of these pixels is getting so small. It's something that only a few years ago professionals had access to, but now amateurs do.
Yes, I think that has been the big change over the last 5 years. The first sort of 10 years of amateur CCD imaging, then the chips were very, very small. But suddenly, I think the explosion with digital cameras in general, larger chips have been mass-produced, and we're able to benefit from that. And certainly now with the digital SLR cameras, where you can get a chip, well, it must be 24 millimetres across, for £400, then that's amazing value now.
Let's assume we've got a beginner, an intermediary, and an advanced astrophotographer. Currently, the sort of options available would be the webcam, the digital SLR, and the specialist CCD cameras that Terry, Jonathan, and Steve were talking about. So, start off with an absolute beginner in astrophotography. What's the best type of camera to start with?
I would certainly start with a digital SLR camera. They're just so easy to use. You get this enormous chip in them. And it makes life much, much easier. If you're trying to point your telescope at something, you've got a chance of hitting the object. And the results with them now, they are starting to rival, you know, cameras that will cost thousands and thousands of pounds. They're not ideal for the planets. I think the exception is if you're interested in the planets, then the webcams or the imaging source type cameras, then they're more appropriate. But for general imaging, then I would start with a digital SLR.
And the sort of thing you're referring to there is the Canon 350D, for example, and some of the Nikon range.
Yes, generally accepted that the Canons, for our work, for astronomical work, are probably better than the Nikons. Nikons might have wonderful lenses, but the Nikons are not designed for astronomical use. Generally, the Canons are, as we speak today, the best for us.
Of course, the added benefit of DSLRs is that you can use them for non-astronomical use as well.
You can. The temptation comes, though, that when you've used them for a while, that you probably want the filter that's built into them swapping out for a filter that will pass the deep red, and that then compromises them somewhat for everyday use. But there are a number, well, there are two firms in Britain now offering to swap the filter in Canon cameras for a reasonable item, something like £200. So for, you know, 400 basic camera plus 200, you've got a really good digital camera. Perhaps not so good for everyday use, but for photographing nebula and galaxies, pretty top notch.
Moving on to webcams, the famous Philips Tucam. Is that something that beginner or an intermediary could use?
Yes, they are really easy to use in the sense that you're going to create hundreds and hundreds of pictures, and just take the best ones. So they are really dedicated for the planets. Small shots of the moon, not so good for a full moon shot, but detailed views of the moon, absolutely brilliant. And the imaging source cameras, which I heard about, even better. They're lower noise, bigger bit depth. That is, there's more shades of grey in their images. All help.
So the Tucam Pro, for example, is well under £100 with all the adapters. If you already have a telescope, you can plug that at the end, connect the other end to your laptop, and you can start recording the AVI of Mars or Jupiter or Saturn. And then using that AVI, you can integrate individual frames using some freely available software?
Yeah, there's several packages that will do that. Registax and Iris, two free ones that select the best pictures automatically. The software is capable of deciding which is a good picture and which is a bad picture. Probably the difficulty with the webcam is actually pointing it at Saturn or Jupiter or whatever. It's quite tricky to hit the object. You're going to need a good finder with a bit of magnification exactly lined up on the centre of your telescope, so that when you find a has Jupiter bang in the middle, then you're confident it'll hit the chip. The chip on the webcams is only 3 millimetres across. In old money, that's an eighth of an inch, which is quite small. The other thing about a webcam is you can use it as an autoguider for your digital SLR or a bespoke camera.
Okay, and finally, the CCD cameras. Now, you can get a variety of different types, particularly the ones which have the built-in integration, like the Astrovid. Is that something that you would go for?
Probably not. The ones with Kodak chips are probably the simplest format to go for. Two manufacturers again in this country and several in America produce a range of cameras with Kodak chips, and generally they are probably the best chips to go with. And even there, there's choices depending on what you want. Some of them have anti-blooming, which when stock stars having ugly bleed marks, vertical stripes on them, but then they're not as sensitive. It's like a telescope. When somebody asks you which telescope do you buy, you've got to make compromises. And I just purchased a new camera and decided that sensitivity was everything. You know, rather than worrying about spikes, blooming spikes on stars, it's more important to get more photons. So that is the way I went. It's a compromise, and at the end of the day, I'm after faint objects, and there's no substitute for sensitivity.
So if you wanted to go for planets, maybe a simple webcam will do, but in your case, because you're focusing on deep sky objects, very faint and small objects usually, sensitivity is what is prominent for you.
Yes. In actual fact, I have all three, I suspect. Other people would do the same thing. You won't have one telescope, you'll have many telescopes, and you probably have several cameras. I love playing with webcams, I love playing with digital SLR cameras, but when it comes to the crunch, you want to get something really, really faint, and there's no substitute for a specialised, dedicated, cooled camera. But I would start with the other two. When the bug bites deep and your wallet's deep enough, then you can perhaps move on to the more expensive, dedicated cameras. It's sort of, in the old days, we used to have something called aperture fever, but it's now sort of like photon fever. You just want to catch more and more and more, and you have to keep getting better and faster cameras.
Your book, Digital Astrophotography, The State of the Art, is something that captures that difficult compromise, because the articles from the various authors actually highlight that problem with compromising.
The book was published by Springer New York, and it's not so well known in Britain, unfortunately, so it's better known in America.
David, I understand you're having an article published in Sky and Telescope.
Yes, I've got an article coming up on asterisms, or putting the fun back into astronomy, that is, observing asterisms and imaging them as well. Totally different. Unstressful observing. There's no straining at the eyepiece to see something very, very faint and difficult. It's straightforward viewing, and when you get the pattern, it puts a smile on your face.
Oh, well, sounds like fun. You don't have a date yet, but it will be available on Sky and Telescope sometime later on this year. David Ratledge, very grateful to you for your time in sharing your experience of astrophotography with us here at AstroTalk UK.
You're very welcome, Ruby. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a non-profit project produced and recorded by Gurbir Singh. He nor any of the participants are paid for their contribution. AT UK's content is not validated against any authoritative source, and all the views and opinions are held by those who choose to express them. If you have a topic of interest you would like to discuss on AT UK, drop me a note, info@astrotalkuk.org.